three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This episode, Andrew and I were, I guess, guests on the Sports Blokes podcast, and we were very thankful to do it. Really enjoyed it. Did a bit of a preseason preview. We didn't quite get to all teams because we had a lovely sprawling chat, but we bring it to you now in its entirety. We encourage all of you to go out and subscribe to the Sport Blokes. Great podcast. They're incredibly well-researched. And a big thank you to Nathan and Stuart.
Well, Shuey, not only is it a great honour to be joined by two very esteemed podcasting gentlemen, they've even let us steer the ship here a little bit. So welcome to a very special episode and a very massive, massive thank you to Joseph and Andrew from the NBL Pocket Podcast. How are you, boys?
I'm very well. Thank you. This is Joseph speaking. We're over each other. Andrew there.
Yeah, g'day. Guys, nice to be here. Thank you for having us to have a chat. A bit of collaboration, as the YouTubers would probably say.
Yeah, so you guys were super nice to us in the early days and very supportive. And here we are, you know, a year and a half later. We uploaded episode 77 the other week. So yeah, we really appreciate your support and we've really been looking forward to this crossover. And we'll obviously get into the blitz and the NBL season that's just upon us. But we thought we'd go down memory lane a little bit early first, didn't we, Shuey?
Yeah, we've obviously with the preseason stuff, it kind of reminds you of some of the older stuff that used to happen. And I was talking to Nate the other day about this Foxtel Cup, this mid-season, midweek sort of thing that used to run. Well, it was 1996, I think they ran, or 1990. Yeah, it was the year after the Cats beat the Giants in the grand final series. And it was just this random sort of bottom plays second bottom, winner plays third bottom, all the way up to the first place team. It was a weird one. We were sort of talking to you guys off air about it and you're saying, you know, didn't have a huge recollection of it. It's a bit of a random one, isn't it?
Well, my first question, sorry, Andrew, I'll jump in quickly. I thought that, did it show on TV? What was it sort of, how was it broadcast? Obviously, it was called the Foxtel Cup. It was on Foxtel, but what time of day was it? When was it? Can you guys fill that in for me?
So my memory was that the Foxtel had just got the rights and it was kind of a precursor to Foxtel having the full season rights the following season. And so it was just to drum up a bit of interest and support, I think. But ABC actually showed it a late night midweek. So I remember watching the games late night on ABC.
Yeah, I think it was Wednesdays.
Yeah, midweek. And they couldn't get the Perth Entertainment Centre. So the one game that the Wildcats played in, because Wildcats finished top, so they only needed to play one game. It was actually at Challenge Stadium. And we were really lucky. We got really good seats there.
Yeah, I think we were like fourth or fifth row sitting sort of free throw line at one end. And it was.
And I've still got it on tape somewhere. And it's a great game too, but that's what I forgot. It was a really close game.
Yeah, it was 119-117.
You got to translate that to digital and put that up, whoever's got the tape.
Well, it's on YouTube.
It's a really, really poor edit though.
Oh, is it? Oh,
it's one of those ones where they'll show some guy taking a charge and then they'll cut to a guy dropping the ball out of bounds and then all of a sudden it's quarter time.
No.
Yeah, right. Do you remember
that? No, this is really worrying actually, because I'm starting to fear that I've just had like an entire 12-month blackout in my life, because I was saying to you guys, I've been watching basketball since 87 pretty religiously, and how did this just entirely miss me? I have no recollection of this. You're telling me that it was a knockout, like it was a different venue. I got nothing. I can't remember it at all.
Forgotten what Foxtel is, don't even know what a cup is. Put this together completely lost, right?
What is going on? What happened to my life in that year? I have to go back and check it out.
Well, it's just another obscure trophy in the Wildcats cabinet, dare I say. But it was a one-off, and yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there were a lot of people out there that don't remember it. But
when you mentioned it to me, I thought it was that, I want to say, was it a 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 competition in Adelaide that was played midweek? Does anyone remember what?
You're talking about Ohio State. Hoops.
The so hustle lately. Hoop. And it was like played at, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday. I was like, this is not gonna work.
Oh, see, dire. That one's lost on me. I don't remember that one at all.
When when 1HD first became a TV, remember when 10 had its spin HD and it was purely sports, and then they canned that after about a year? It was desperate content for that, and it just did not go well at all. Do you remember it, Andrew?
I remember that one. Yeah, yeah. The high stakes. I'm sure you're talking about the high stakes hoops. And I think it was high a Jeff Van.
Was it 5
I think it was a Jeff Van Groningen sort of idea. And he had this idea to bring in, you know, put a big cash prize at the end of it, and amazing players will come over and play in Adelaide for a few weeks to make it, to win some cash. But I don't think, if you're talking, you know, high quality players being, you know, a ragtag group of NBL players, a couple of SBL imports and that kind of thing, that seemed to be what it actually attracted.
In theory, great idea. Didn't quite pan out that time, but maybe things could be different. I mean, when you sent me the message about this, Nathan Stewart, when you sent it to me, my immediate thought was, I vaguely remember the Foxtel Cup, but the thought is, how could the project or the idea translate today? And Andrew and I have talked about this a bunch of times, like how you could do a Foxtel Cup today or do it new. I'm throwing this one to Nathan. Do you, when you remember the Foxtel Cup, what would you want to do an incantation of it today? What would you do?
Well, I guess the next iteration of it is almost the NBL Cup, isn't it? That's come along. And my understanding is that's not actually going to happen this season. And I think COVID, it's going to be another COVID interruption season. and we'll probably get onto that shortly. But yeah, I don't know if it's the sort of thing that would be necessary these days, but the NBL Cup seems to be the next evolution of it, I guess.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It seems like a perfect translation, have that round robin sort of effect. Because this was the issue that I had with the Foxtel Cup, was that a team like, say, you know, the Hobart team back then and the Gold Coast Rollers of the days, they had no chance. They had to run the table against, 15 other teams, basically. And the teams at the top two or three were basically always going to win it.
Yeah, bizarre format. Yeah. Really bizarre format. I think maybe like the fourth or fifth team was the first road team to win.
There were two teams, I think, that won away. It was,
and they only
like,
won like one away
I
game.
Think Illawarra and Newcastle, I think, were the only teams that actually won away.
Can I quickly throw an idea at you?
Yes.
And I think you may have actually spearheaded this idea, but my idea to do a new version of it would be like play your normal season, but in the season, just nominate a game. Like, okay, let's say in the second round, Adelaide are playing Brisbane. Okay, this one counts towards, you know, quote unquote, an NBL Cup. Like whoever wins this one, this is like a cup game as well as a regular season game. So you kind of have two tallies going. And if Adelaide beat Brisbane in that, they get a certain amount of points. And then you kind of play off. So you just add a little bit more value to what was already happening in a regular season game. And then at the end, whoever's made this quote unquote cup game then plays for the Champions Cup or whatever you want to call it. Does that make sense?
So would you nominate the game? When would you nominate it? I guess it's a good idea in the sense of if you had injury trouble, you could try and pick a time when you had your most full strength team.
I guess you just at the start of the year put out each round, and then in each particular round would be one matchup that's already taking place for regular season points that's got this added value to it. And then at the end of the year, you just do it on points and award a winner. I think that's a bit deflating. Or the top 2 points getters then play off in a single round game after the grand final.
That's interesting. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Racer even. Yeah, depending on who the teams were. Interesting.
Yeah.
I was kind of almost trying to think if there was a way that you could make what they do in the soccer work where you kind of have, you know, one of the things I kind of enjoy is watching, yeah, in England and across Australia, all these minnow teams coming up and playing against the top tier teams, and these amazing stories of a team. I think it was a team called like Oakley or something from Queensland who were in the 712th division or something, and they knocked off an A-League team. And whether you could do something with that.
That would be fun to watch.
That would be fun. The only problem you'd have there is I remember at not last year's Blitz because there wasn't one, but the year before the NBL Blitz, remember there was like an NBL 1 All-Stars team? Now, maybe that wasn't the best outfit, but I remember them just getting routinely murdered. But I guess that's the spirit of competition. Like, who knows? Maybe a team does just rise up. But
And I guess it's different in a game like soccer where it's, you know, one goal can be the difference between a win and a loss, whereas basketball obviously is a little bit more play-by-play.
That's why you play the games, right?
You could do an Elam ending on it, and then that might bring in some extra interest.
Oh, hello.
We might differ on opinion when it comes to Elam ending, actually. That might be a taboo topic.
We'll come back to it.
That note's a bit old school. I'm kind of old school, but I'm coming around to some of the newer stuff.
So you mentioned Blitz. I guess it's maybe a good time to move on to that. What have you guys made of it? Have you had a chance to watch much and early thoughts, I guess?
Look, I went in with good intentions, thinking I'm gonna engage in the Blitz. I'm going to give it a red hot go. That thinking lasted about two quarters of basketball. And I was like, this is painful. for a myriad of reasons. It was painful because of the quality of the play. It was painful because of the venues they were playing at and just the appearance of it. It was painful because of the quality of the broadcast. And I was like, I can't do this. I'll watch some highlights on Twitter, let the NBL do the hard work of watching the slog, and I'll just enjoy the cut up pieces. It's rough, really rough.
If I can mirror what Andrew said, I mean, it's preseason stuff, so I actually don't like to watch too much of it. I find it can discolor your thinking because you're like, oh, that guy looked really good. But you're like, oh, the defense is pretty average there, or just coach just trying something different and new, and the rotations won't be what it is in the regular season. So I only really watch about a quarter, maybe a half of any game I've watched. And in total, I've probably watched 6 or 8 quarters of basketball of every team, but just mainly that first quarter, see who they roll out as a starting five. They typically cross over. But Andrew, I mean, as far as the broadcast goes, I was pretty shocked. I got on Twitter and was kind of obnoxious, like, oh, who's watching it anyway? And I have to applaud Nick Tan. Nick Tan is without bias. He gave me a hit on the snout. He's like, actually, there's more people watching than you'd think. And I think he said there was about sort of anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000, 6,000 people watching. And then when Nick Tan said that, I thought to myself, yeah, he's right. Like, that's enough people to try. And as Andrew had said, the broadcast with names wrong, like, you know, we're talking getting names right and numbers and things like that. This is, what, 15 minutes of someone's time to make sure it's all right? I was really, yeah. And as a result, it just took me out of it where I thought, oh, maybe if the presentation was Swish, it could have pulled me in a bit more. But I don't know who does them. I think it's Sports TG do this, but there are so many options as far as doing that micro broadcast. I was really quite surprised by it. What do you two think?
How much of that issue do you think is put down to the fact that it was Kyo freebies? Did the NBL wipe their nose to spite their face here a little bit? Like, if it had been paid service rather than freebie, they might have invested a little bit more money into it. It might have looked like a better product. Like, that. My concern with it is it might not have attracted new viewers. So the diehards and the people that are already fans will be watching. But I almost think that it might have a negative effect on the newer viewers because it was so poor. I also found the Melbourne broadcast maybe a little bit better than the Tassie broadcast. So I'm a bit like you, Joseph. I watched a fair few first quarters or first halves. I really enjoyed the Southeast Melbourne New Zealand game, I've got to say. Punctuated with a double clutch bank shot three by Finn Delaney. Oh my God. Like, it was actually quite an enjoy. I said to Stewie, because I'm notorious for hating the preseason, like notorious, because there's other stuff going on, like NFL's in mid-season, for example. I'd much rather be watching that. But I actually, I'll be honest, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And yeah, that game was an absolute cracker. Yeah, really.
He played that shot very cool as well, didn't he? Just knocked it in.
Just wander off the court. It's so good. Yeah, I'll kind of echo a couple of your comments. And certainly for me, yeah, a little bit of the professionalism was lost. Things like they were showing the starting fives. And I don't know if you guys noticed this, but a couple of them, they actually used their Twitter handles instead of their names.
Yes,
Jack McTray 1.
Yeah, and there was Shilly _ for Shay Illy.
Yeah. How hard is it to just write the guy's name? Like, people that are tuning in for the first time may not know who Jack McTray 1 is.
Yeah. Or if you're going to do that, and I'm actually all for that in a way, if you had their name and then underneath it, their Twitter handle. And this is the broader thing I wanted to talk to you guys about is, like, the NBL seems to be skewing very young. I just got an email just before that they've teamed up with Foot Locker. Now, Foot Locker to me is a youth culture brand, right?
Yep.
And I find that if you're going to appeal to young people, and this is not a knock on young people. I was the same as a young kid. You're very kind of cynical of, like, when something's trying to be cool, but is it? There's no greater failure than when you're trying to be cool or trying to be swish, and trying to be young and you fail. So the fact that when you talked about the broadcast would have deterred new viewers, I couldn't agree more, because you're trying to appeal to younger people. You've got to be swish. So if you're going to put up Twitter handles, I'd have the name and the Twitter handle below. I think that's a brilliant initiative for the NBL. It's all about engagement. Like, even in the commentary booth, it should be Dwayne Russell, his Twitter underneath it. So if you want to, unfortunately, if you want to slag him off, if you're that kind of bad person, you can. But if you want to talk to him, if you want to ask a question or say something positive, the avenue is there. And I think I've often thought that's strange. When you've got someone like Homicide, who's huge on Twitter, but they don't put his Twitter handle there and don't encourage people to get that engagement data stats. You know what I'm talking about, Andrew. So from that side of the broadcast, I felt bad about it.
Right on the money there, because obviously they had that deal with TikTok as well. So clearly that is a youth focus. I think you're bang on there. Absolutely.
And then they've gone away. Obviously, I think the cash of Rupert Murdoch News Corporation killed the TikTok deal. But it is a bit of short-termist thinking, isn't it? If you're trying to get that younger audience, are they going to be going to KO? Or are they going to be looking at TikTok and and Twitch and, you know, like go where the people are.
YouTube, yeah. Like YouTube is desperately trying to get into sports. But I mean, yeah, the interesting thing is when you talk about the broadcast and it not being so switched, I don't really actually put it down to KO or the fault of the NBL. They've hired a client in, I think, Sports TG. If I'm wrong about that, I really apologize to Sports TG. But these companies do that. And it's like, well, that's, you've hired a, you, the NBL has hired a client to do its broadcast and it just wasn't up to scrap. So, but if the NBL hasn't sent on a note saying, hey, we really didn't like that after round one, fix it immediately. That's on the NBL. So I'd really love to chat to someone at the NBL about how that all went down.
One of the other things as well that I did notice with that was the, yeah, I mean, obviously we've sort of mentioned already the lack of uniformity around the Twitter handles, but also just the timing on the clocks. I know a lot of people were
noticing. Oh, it was like a running clock, yeah.
It was almost like a running clock at some stage. And there were times when what they were showing on the screen was 20, 25 seconds out in terms of what the actual time was.
The score was off and on too. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, stuff, man. Simple, like names, score and time. I mean, outside of those three things, that other than making sure the lens cap's not on, that's it.
I just wonder how it seems like every time a new broadcast sort of production is rolled out, they try and reinvent everything as well. It's like, how can we display the statistics differently? How can we get the scores to animate through? It's like, surely there is a best practice way of doing this now, and it's a solved problem, but they seem like they have to try and put their own little pieces on it each time. Mm. It's like, just watch an NBA game and do what they do, you know, and it's as simple as that. Don't try and do anything fancy or different or unique. Nah, just give us what the NBA do and you'll be golden.
With the stats, what drives me crazy with the NBL, and I really hope they don't do it this season, is they'll show a guard and they'll show points, rebounds, shooting percentage, and they won't show assists, and they'll show a point guard without the assist total. It's just, oh, guys, it's not hard.
To focus on a positive here, because we've done a bit of negative, I want to say Damon Lowry was good commentary. Did we all enjoy him?
I enjoyed the commentary across the board, actually. I love the banter between Santa Maria and Hawley too. They have really good chemistry. They always make me smile and laugh. Yeah, Lowry, I did enjoy that.
Yeah, I've warmed to him. At first, I was a bit not sure, but the more I listened, the more I grew to enjoy him. And a breath of fresh air compared to Homicide.
You're still not a fan, Andrew?
He has not won me over, I'm afraid. As much as I try, I keep trying to give him another chance, and he keeps letting me down.
I started to come around last season.
Maybe this year a bit different.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because he started back in the Wildcats, but I actually started to come around to him last season.
I love the little feud that he had with Bryce. I say feud in inverted commas with Bryce Cotton. Yeah, the time when he hit that three and got fouled, he's pointing at him. And so I love that little back and forward they had. I thought that was great.
Stu, nailed it. I agree. And that's what Homicide does. And that's why I like him, because if you're going for a youth market, he is a youth guy. He's very active on Twitter and socials. His link I've got as a connection on LinkedIn doesn't stop. So as far as a guy who's willing to put himself out there, which I think the NBL struggles with at times, it struggles with that sense of self. He has no temerity or lack of temerity when it comes to putting himself out there. So I'm a fan, and he's done my show. And I'm sure the sport folks, if you asked him, he'd be here tomorrow or this afternoon to do it. So I'm a fan in that sense. But I love him alongside Gaze, that sort of new and old. I dare say, you know, black and white. I think it's a great combination. I love it.
Yeah, he had good banter with Sean Redditch as well. I'll give him credit there. That was a fun little, you know, back and forth to listen to.
The one tiny little thing I did have with the commentators, and I can't remember who the guy was that was commentating down in Tassie, but there was a really awkward moment where he was trying to remember Calvin Telford but couldn't remember his name.
Is that when was it Adams that had the dunk?
It was Adams that had that massive left-handed dunk. He was talking about this high-flying guy that used to play with Tassie in the 1990s, and I'm sitting there screaming at the TV. I'm like, it's Calvin Telford, come on.
Yeah. Oh, he was amazing.
That's where, if they put up the Twitter, you could have gone, there's your answer. Bang.
Done, yeah.
You
know?
I tweeted that. That was what I said in my Twitter.
There you go.
Exactly. Could have had it by the end of the sentence, basically.
Yeah, he competed in dunk comps. Well, that opens the door. Who were your favourite players growing up, guys, on other teams? I mean, who did you hate as well, maybe? Were there players you loved to hate?
I loved Andrew Vlahov because I was more of a guard player. I'm about 6 feet tall. So I like to watch players who I can't emulate at all. And I could never emulate his size and strength. And he was, I dare say, he's the most competitive player the NBL's ever had. People say Rob Rose. I don't know him personally, but man, Vlahov was just so he was just so tough. And he was still probably the biggest, strongest guy I've ever seen. Maybe because I was younger when I watched him, but loved Vlahov. Loved Vlahov. And then
that's interesting because that's rare. He tended to be one of those players that you love to hate if you weren't a Wildcats fan. So that's really interesting to hear that, actually.
You see, I grew up in Perth.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, there you go.
I grew up in Perth. Oh, so yeah, that was perfect. That was perfect. So I love Vlahov for that reason. And he visited a camp or school when I was younger. So that, and then Ricky, obviously, Grace were the two. And then the guy who I dislike, I am proud to say I respectfully cheered against Andrew Gaze.
Yeah,
I knew he was good, but I didn't like him. I didn't like a guy who just was always hitting threes when guys kind of had a hand down or backdoor cuts. That was his two plays. And it drove you nuts when he dropped 30 and you're like, how, he's got gray hair, how's he doing this? Respectfully cheered against him. Andrew Cady, who do you have?
In terms of players that I liked, I really liked Brett Maher, actually. I thought he was always fun to watch. Was so dynamic. His jump shot, he had a jump shot much the way Bryce Cotton is now, just a ridiculous amount of elevation off the legs. Mm. And it was always incredible to me that how do you jump that high and maintain such good shooting form? I'm amazed by guys who can do that, because when I'm shooting, it's a low jump shoot. You know, like I could jump, but on a jump shot, it was a small jump. So those little things, you're like, I don't know how he does that and so consistently. So I was a big Brett Maher fan. Obviously, I've grown up in Perth too. So locally, it was guys like James Crawford. I always really liked. Way back when, Mike Ellis was the guy that I modeled my free throw shooting technique after. I'm like, I'm just going to copy him. So it was. And then going back, they're probably the ones that I recall really liking. Guys I hated. The obvious one was Shane Heal. Like, everybody hated Shane Heal.
Yeah.
And then probably also Frank, the original, Drimmick. Yep. I didn't like him at all.
Dr. Mick is what our friends used to call him because I didn't know how to say his name. Yeah.
Well, that's Anthony, annoying.
He and Anthony are basically the same person.
It's, they are very similar, yeah.
Very niggly, the sort of guy.
And that's why I don't like Anthony punch, either. I don't like
What about modern players? Sorry to interrupt. Is there any modern players that you don't like to cheer? You don't like Andrew?
Modern players, probably Harry Froehling jumps to mind.
Yeah, ooh. I was going to say I can't stand Sean Bruce. Respectfully, I just don't like the way. I'm just being honest with you guys. You've asked a question, I'll give you an answer. When in the blitz game, in fact, in the blitz, I think it was Liafa who he sort of drove into, bumped to the floor. I think it was a block call, and then he threw the ball him on the ground. I was like, I can't stand this guy. I respectfully can't stand.
Yeah, he's like Ben Magin. Reminds me of him. A little bit.
Yeah, that's a good comp.
Can't stand. Couldn't stand him.
Stewie, Nathan.
Just quickly on Ben Magin. I've always said this to Nathan. He struck me as the sort of guy who was always 45 years old. It just seemed like he'd been in the league for two decades at any given stage of his career after his rookie year. It was ridiculous.
He could have left, didn't he? He went overseas for a while and then returned.
He did. And he came back and you're thinking, how is he still alive? Anyway. So I'll start off, I guess, with some of the guys that I didn't realize that I liked at the time. But as I look back on it now, I look fondly at guys like Dwayne McLean. I really loved watching.
We're going to have a similar list.
Watching Day Train.
Yeah.
Everett Stevens was another one from Newcastle. That real high flyer, you know, just drive past you on the baseline and put someone on a poster.
That tandem with Terry Dozier.
Yeah. Calvin Telford, as I said, he was on that list. I think everyone enjoyed watching Brett Rainbow in those early dunk comps as well with the Melbourne Tigers. That was all he could do, but he was still very, very good. Guys I didn't like, absolutely echo that sentiment on Andrew Gaze. We booed him mercilessly.
We did, yeah. We
didn't know why.
Yeah, well,
because they were 93.
They killed us. No, we weren't at the game in 93, but that was when my supporting kind of really moved into fourth or fifth gear was in 1993 when I was about 10. And yeah, that one stung. So I didn't appreciate Gazy. Pretty much till he joined my NBA team, the San Antonio Spurs in 99, actually. And now I love him. I think he's a national treasure. I think he's absolutely.
Oh, likewise. Yeah. Oh, totally. I respectfully cheered against him. What can I say?
Yeah.
I would hope that he appreciates the booing as much as anything. Like a guy that's been around the sport that long, I think like booing is a sign of respect, right? You don't boo a guy that's not going to hurt you because you don't care. But he was the guy who could destroy your team. So you had to try and find something to put him off. And how else does the crowd get involved? You know, I think it's a credit to him.
Not one exception to that rule, though, of the you don't boo a guy unless you respect him. Robert Sibley.
Baseline bandit.
You don't think people respected him?
No, he was a thug. He would just set horrible back screens. And it's probably just because of the time that he leveled Trevor Torrence. But I had no respect for his game at all.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I love it. That's a strong answer. It's great.
I think he was probably like their version of Andrew Vlahov, though. Bit of an enforcer. Set a really hard screen. He's in great shape now, by the way. They wheeled him out with an anniversary team in Brizzy last season, and he's looking in really good shape, the Sibs. Yeah.
It is a shame. You don't really get enforcer players like that anymore, do you? And everybody's too friendly. They all like each other. I miss those days when there was always a guy on a team that was just there to smash people, like Chris Blakemore. Yeah, you know, with another guy.
There you go.
There to destroy somebody and took pleasure in it. I miss those days.
Brian Conklin's probably the last guy, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, wow.
Yeah,
he certainly did that. Can I say something on that as far as you talk about like heat in the game and trash talking that? Because I'm reminded that time Vlahov was like, every time we go into Melbourne, their crowds are pathetic. Do you remember this interview you gave years ago? I'll see if I can send you the clip. But really, over this offseason, the only people that are commentating on basketball in Australia, or the main voices are Bogut, and he mainly talks about the NBA. Chris Anstey is good for a quote. A little bit of Homicide and Santa Maria. And I'm kind of struggling, like who's, you know, you think about who's covering the game in the NBA, and there's people from the East Coast, West Coast, you know, men, women, like Ramona Shelburne's a big newsbreaker in Los Angeles, Zach Lowe's in New York, and all these Americans. But in the NBA, like there's only a couple of people who give quotes. I haven't heard a quote from a player other than Jason Giddey this preseason of note. You know, why aren't these guys going back and forth? That, and Andrew, you know, summed it up there, I guess.
Good point. I can't think of many other quotes either. And speaking of dust-ups, there was Dusty Hannes and Kevin White in the Wildcats Adelaide preseason game. Yeah, there was a bit of beef there, but not quite.
Dusty tore the Wildcats apart.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he did. He really did.
I mean, if you thought it was savage in person, wait until you see the instant messages on WhatsApp. Now, that's where Kevin White can be really hurtful.
He's never going to live that down, is he?
You can't live that down. I like him, respect, he's apologised, I forgive, but you cannot forget.
We had a chat with Cody Ellis a few weeks ago, and he said that Kevin White's really good value, really funny guy, a bit of a prankster. So, yeah, interesting character, that one.
I'm sure he's a lovely guy.
But for me, similar to Stewie, Everett Stevens and Dwayne McLean, I was a big fan of. I was a big fan of Melvin Thomas. I always really enjoyed watching him play and those Illawarra Hawks teams or Wollongong, whatever they were Illawarra back then, with Butch Hayes as well. Yeah, I really enjoyed them. I enjoyed watching Glenn Saville play. I thought he was really good. By the way, Angus Glover was doing his best Glenn Saville impersonation in the preseason, I thought. I can't believe how bouncy that guy is. He's had three knee reconstructions, and he's throwing it down. It was fantastic.
Anytime I see a white gingerhead guy throwing dunks like that, I'm all about it.
I've forgotten the name. Talking about players we love, I'd feel remiss if I didn't bring this one up. John Reilly was a guy.
He was the best shooter
in the country ever. I thought it was brilliant and had attitude and apparently talked an incredible amount of trash. So I just wanted to throw that name in.
That's a good one.
He's on both lists, really, isn't he?
I just love that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of trash, Derek Rucker was great with the trash talk too. Like, we were lucky enough to get upgraded to courtside seats one game, and he absolutely went off for the West Sydney Razorbacks. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he had a 40.
Oh, that was Townsville.
Was it when he was still with Townsville? Was it? Oh, okay. Yeah. Still with Townsville. Oh, that's right. It was too. Yeah.
I wasn't even at the game.
No, that's right. Yeah, because we've talked about it on a previous episode. Yeah. And he was just juring with the crowd in the seats. And oh, that was brilliant. Absolutely.
I think
Scotty Fisher's brother happened to be sitting there. So they were going back and forth. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Well, on Derek Rucker, I mean, I think what gave him confidence was the man dated Tina Arena at the height of her fame. You know, at that point, you can say whatever you want.
Well, I never knew that. There you go.
He dated Tina Arena.
There you go. Movers and shakers.
Wow. Yeah, Rucker's my hero. My hero. I've got a question from the Blitz. Going back to the game. We were talking about risers and fallers, weren't we, Nathan, in the pre-show?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, absolutely.
Give me a riser.
I think New Zealand. Yep. So they finished eighth last season, 12-24. Now they're probably going to have to be road warriors again. I think it's going to be yet another COVID-affected season. And New Zealand will probably be the worst hit by that. Probably Perth second, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if Perth don't play another home game after those first five, but we'll get to them. So, yeah, I would say New Zealand is a riser for me. I don't know about what you guys think.
Same. I had the same thing written down. Andrew, what do you have?
I've actually gone with Adelaide. I think they're coming off a low base. And I think it won't take much to get them play much better. And I like the early signs of what CJ's changing about that team. It seems like they're playing with a lot more confidence and self-awareness.
You're still mourning the sacking of Connor Henry, Andrew. I know you're a big fan.
All right. I don't think anyone was harsher in the country than Andrew. And I applaud him for it.
I thought Adelaide were very kind to him, not sacking him earlier. Although I do like the idea of flying him into the country and then him.
Oh, that was next level.
Such a dumb
thing. Quarantine and stew for two weeks. Oh, my God.
That's just not an Adelaide thing. That actually really bristled fans. Twitter's my only... I don't live in Adelaide, so it's my only window into Adelaide. But that's just not how Adelaide does business. That's not how the 36ers like to be seen. And they really thought that was poor form. But I think they had to move on from him.
I thought it was a boss move to do that. It's quite funny. And look, I think the team is only going to be better for the fact that he's not associated with them anymore.
I wonder what hotel they put him up in for the 2 weeks. Probably one with like a dead guy in the pool. To have 2 weeks of that, now you're gone.
A one star.
Oh, that's funny.
Sorry, I cut into your answer there, Andrew. But I find Adelaide to be the most hardest team to predict, actually. They could go either way.
I'm going to say I disagree with Andrew because I just don't. I bless Isaac Humphries, but if he plays more than three quarters of the season, I will take all of you to a steak dinner, my treat, get whatever you want. I just don't think he'll see time. He just misses a bit of game. And the problem I have with Adelaide is the same thing with Isaac Humphries is when your best player, I think he might be the best player one of, when he's a better singer than basketball player, and that's not because he's a bad player, it's just because he's a brilliant singer, I have my worries. But if he plays three quarters of the season, which they're going to need every game from him, and he's missed time everywhere he's been. So I for that reason, I'm like, I can't put my chips in.
I'll go into bat a little bit for Adelaide here because I'm with Nate a little bit. I don't know exactly which way they're going to fall, but I think Mitch McCarron was the pickup of the offseason.
Oh, huge.
In terms of,
yeah, I agree.
You add him to a team that's got like Sunday Dech is a really, really good on-ball defender.
Beast.
Isaac Humphries can block shots if he plays, that sort of thing. So they could be a really good defensive team. I think, as you mentioned, CJ Bruton as a coach, he will develop guys like Mojave King and Sunday Dech a lot more as well. So I think they're going to give these guys a lot more of a leash to try and develop themselves than what Mojave had in Cairns last season. So there's a lot of opportunity, I think, for Adelaide to be really good. And they're always a tough team to play at home. So they've kind of got that advantage there. I think... For me, though, yeah, a lot of it's just going to come down to how well their imports play. If Dusty Hannes is kind of, if he gives them that shooting that he had, I mean, Adelaide were last in three-pointers taken and made last season. So they kind of need guys to be able to spread that floor a little bit more. If they can get that, Todd Withers, I think he was a 40% three-point shooter with Bologna last year. So they do have a lot of guys that could potentially spread the floor. So who knows?
We can see Hannah's got a bit of mongrel in him.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of fire there. Make up for the loss of Jack McVay.
I have a question for everyone. What do you think is going to happen with Case Otto?
Oh, well, Adelaide have a track record of, I don't want to say spoon feeding, but certainly giving mass minutes to next stars. I mean, Giddy last year got a lot, I think on merit, to be fair to Josh Giddy. I think he played pretty well. But I mean, they were still a losing team and by quite a lot with a pretty decent roster that we all could look around and say, they probably could have won more game, especially down the stretch. The amount of times they'd be kind of in a game and then just get totally blown out. But it's hard to differentiate that from whether they were giving minutes to themselves. So, I mean, they've done this new deal with the Philippines. Like, that's a TV deal. Who knows if that TV deal, the Philippine TV studio that's done that, has said, we want to see him on the court for a minimum of 20 minutes. And, he's trying to get minutes out of or ahead of Johnson and Humphries. Are we putting them in the two of the five best bigs in the NBL? So where's this kid going to see minutes? And they have
got
to give him minutes.
Besto there too. So
Besto a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's like, where are they going to give him the minutes? Because I looked at that Philippine deal and went, oh no, that's come with a condition.
Yeah,
and you do not want to take minutes off Humphries and Johnson. So I answer that with trepidation, but they're going to eke out 10 to 15 minutes for him. And he looks like he's young and thin and a little bit slow, but decent, decent game. But
he's got the tools, doesn't he? Yeah, he's got that raw talent. Yeah.
So I have a bit of a worry. Where are you at, Andrew?
Yeah, very similar actually. And you think about if it was anybody other than Jeff Van Groningen and Grant Kelly in the management team, I might think otherwise. But those are two guys that have shown themselves to be pretty focused on the monetary outcomes. So I'm thinking that there may be commands from above to get this guy some minutes.
Can you imagine if sitting in the Philippines, huge basketball fans, right? Huge.
Oh, yeah.
And sitting there, and then they go through a tight game of the NBL and Soto hasn't hit the court? I mean, that's like, we saw what happens in the Philippines. Like, the death threat.
Well, who was it? Was it Matt McQuaid that's been getting like hassle from people in the Philippines because he wasn't high on their league, on their local league over there?
Yeah. Wow. We're going to have to send Luke Longley over there again to get between us. Sort of stand over some people.
That might have been one of the scariest moments in international basketball history.
Well, certainly in our lifetime. Yeah.
Well, certainly for the Aussies, not for the Filipinos. I mean, they had us outnumbered probably, a couple of thousand to one. So
it was. Well, you think about European leagues where they're pegging like batteries at people and bottles and stuff. But international
basketball, it was unbelievable. I mean, the thing was, you learnt there categorically. We all learned a valuable lesson there that there's not a basketball player alive who knows how to set his feet, put his hands in front of his face, and throw a decent punch. Because if any of them could, there would have been serious damage done there. But some of those punches were these merry swingers that were, they weren't
pretty
good. But
let's not forget
the Karate Kid.
Was it Thon Maker? Yeah,
doing bicycle, like Liu Kang impersonations, basically, yeah.
Dearie me. Just spamming circle at the start of the round, yeah, I know.
I worry about their big stocks, though, Adelaide. I do worry about them. So Joseph, you've mentioned Isaac can be a bit injury prone. Okay, yeah, they've got Cam Besto to slot in there at starting centre if they need to. But if he's in foul trouble or if he goes down, the depth of the bigs I really worried about is Adelaide and Perth. I think those two teams, if they get in foul trouble or get an injury to a major big, I think it could be big trouble for them.
So, we were talking rises and fallers. Are you forecasting Perth as a faller? They finished, second or... They finished top or second last year?
I think, so Perth finished second at 25-11, which was...
Are they bettering that or getting worse?
I think they're on the bubble of the four. I think they'll probably be in that range of third through sixth. I think Melbourne is my faller. 28-8 last season, obviously lost guys like Jock Landale, Mitch McCarron, Scotty Hobson, Udai Barber. The list goes on and on and on. David Anderson retired. So I think Melbourne's probably on that playoff bubble too. At this point, I would have them out of it. But yeah, so Melbourne were my fallers for this season.
Yeah, I agree. I had Melbourne as well as the faller. Don't really see them having enough to get it done this season. So, yeah, big faller for them. Obviously, you're at the top.
The one import thing for me with Melbourne United is interesting.
It just shows how much they spent on Dalvadog. Yeah. I've heard reports of he asked for a mil. They said 650. He said 700K for the season for 3 years. I mean,
that's a lot of money for an old bloke.
That's Bryce Cotton money, and he's a perennial MVP. So it's too much. You could have got two McCarrons for that price. Imagine if your backcourt is two McCarron-esque players. No, it'll be a great promotional tour, not denying that, but I have huge concerns for them in the four, for them playing. We have huge concerns.
I think that's legitimate. Shows. Yeah, that's very reasonable.
One thing I will say, when I was sort of looking at the rises and fallers and where I thought people would finish on the ladder, it was actually interesting how similar I think this season could look to last season's ladder.
Oh, really? I kind of think a little bit the opposite. Why do you say that, Stu?
I look at it and I sort of say the teams that were kind of hovering around there, like your Sydneys, your Adelaides, Brisbane, I think will probably drop off a little bit. I don't really think, unless Lamar Patterson goes nuclear, I can't see them doing too much. But for me, I think the top four, you'll have at least three of those be the same. I think most people's consensus is Perth, Illawarra, Southeast Melbourne, Phoenix will be in that top four. And then it's kind of three or four other teams that will probably be similar teams to last season, battling for those spots. I think Cairns will be towards the bottom. And then it's just, does Tasmania, do they slot in at the bottom or do they slot in at second bottom? That's, I don't know. I just don't see a huge amount of movement.
I was just saying, you were saying not a lot of movement other than Melbourne. I mean, obviously they were like lock stock for the top. They're going to be in the flow. That would be the one sort of iffy one you'd have there, Stuart.
Yeah, you could see them and New Zealand potentially being the two teams that kind of, I'm not saying that New Zealand will get up to top and Melbourne will drop to eighth or anything, but you could see that those kind of them being the big slap. Yeah,
I totally agree with you.
I wouldn't be surprised if percentage determines the spots in the ladder. So last season we had two teams finish on 19 and 17, and then we had a team finish on 18 and 18. So fourth through sixth was really, really tight. And I suspect that will happen again. And I wouldn't be surprised if we have multiple teams on a tied record when the season finishes.
Interesting. Well, I'm of the opinion that Melbourne are dropping out. So who's coming in? And I think New Zealand, I personally, but I could also kind of make a case for Brisbane. I know you weren't high on Stu. I quite liked what I saw. I saw a fit Lamar Patterson. I saw this Franks guy who can kind of play. And they lost Hodgson, who, you know, gives you 20 good NBL minutes before fouling out. If Harrison can start.
Tyrell Harrison, yeah.
They're thin. Boy, they're a little, their rotation is lean, which will probably hurt them, but they're as lean in rotation as Lamar Patterson is looking, and he's an MVP candidate. So I'm actually higher on them making it. What do you think, Andrew? We haven't spoken about it.
Well, they could do well. I'm going to change tactics a little bit because I'm a little bit conflicted because I went out early and said that I had Perth for the title, but I can make a really solid argument that Perth are not going to make the finals as well.
Oh yeah.
And I'm looking at them and seeing a team that has no identity, no idea what they're doing, a little bit lost without the flex offense backing them up, and just and a new import that's hardly played. I'm seeing some early warning signs from the Perth Wildcats that their run may be done.
Here's two big things.
Oh, finals, Andrew. Sorry to interrupt you, Nate.
No, yes, finals. Finals. No, I could see New Zealand maybe pushing Perth out.
Like, come on. Bless you. I don't cotton law. I think that's enough, isn't it? And then I need to see their schedule. I haven't studied the schedule close enough yet. Can I throw it to the two lads in Perth?
So here's three things for me with Perth. Oh, sorry.
Nathan. No, Nathan, please.
So one, Scott Morrison, Coast GoMo. I'm trying to get that trending, Coast GoMo. What are the chances that Peter Dutton tries to get his job by accident and gets the wrong Scott Morrison? Anyway, sorry. The Wildcats have had a very bad preparation. So they didn't meet their coach in the flesh until like knocking on the door of the Blitz. So he's been coaching via iPad. So major preparation issues, schedule issues. Starting off with five games at home, there's this new COVID variant new variant that's wreaking havoc very early days in the last few days, but it's already got its way to Europe after starting in Africa. I wouldn't be surprised if Perth don't play another home game after their first five. So that's a major issue too. And then the third issue for me is bigs. The Wildcats don't have a power forward on their roster. Okay, really? they have guys that can play small ball four. They've got Victor Law, they've got Jesse Wagstaff. But they do not have a power forward. Like, you could not be moving further away from the days of the wall in the 90s with all the bigs that the Wildcats had. And as you say, Hodgson is a foul machine. Majok can get into foul trouble a little bit as well. I actually really like the both of those, but I really worry about Perth's depth in the big man stocks, really four and five major issues. And they're the things that could scuttle to me the playoff streak. Stewie and I both had them picked out of the playoffs last season. I have picked them in this year because I'll follow the great Andrew Gaze, who says, pick them until they finally lose. So I will pick them in, but geez, I worry. I do.
No, I think your first point is the best, which is lack of preparation and a bit of COVID. Like, sports is, life comes first, sports comes second. And I just look at the turmoil they've had, particularly in the front office. You have lost Trevor. Well, the Wildcats have lost Trevor Gleeson. I mean, that is your pillar. That's your rock. That's your president, prime minister. We've got a new one, whatever. Yeah, bad joke. But they've lost this pillar of everything. And their preparation's been, let's put it, poor. But let's go back to what we were talking about with the Blitz before. They're pushing a young product. They're going away from a Wildcat, grind you down, grab it off the offensive boards. Like, just the Wildcats nail you with like ha-ha plays where you turn over and they score on you. Ha-ha. You don't block out, sneak in, lay it back up. Ha-ha plays. And they're not going to do that. They're going to play this NBA light, which is where the NBL is trending. And it's just so counter opposite to what the Wildcats have done for their entire successful run. So that's my big one. And then also, before, like you talk about the schedule, Nathan, I'm so glad you brought that up, because before, the Wildcats would have gone, no, we don't like that schedule. Folded their arms. What are you going to do? We're the winningest club. We're the biggest club. You need us. But now there's that Melbourne arm that says, we kind of dictate what you do now. You know, that Wildcat crossed armed, because it was always them, always on the West Coast in their own orbit. Now they don't have that power that they once had to be a bit demanding of the schedule. So I have huge worries. But to counter that, still got Bryce Cotton. He's the best player who's ever played in the NBL. He's the best player of the NBL the last, since Gaze left. He's brilliant. So,
and I'm a big fan of Vic Law too. Massive fan.
And Vic Law's a good player too, but I agree with everything you said. And the rotational depth is poor and the preparation's poor. Stewie, what do you think?
I think, okay, so firstly, with regards to the schedule, it's funny you say that. I was actually looking at the schedule before. The first eight games that Perth play, five of them are at home against Adelaide, Brisbane, Cairns and Tasmania. So you're talking about certainly three of the four teams that people are expecting to be towards the bottom. So that's very favourable. Then we're talking about away games at Adelaide, Brisbane and Tassie, I think. So they're kind of broken into those two halves where you've got the two Victorian sides, the two New South Wales sides and New Zealand playing against each other and then the rest. Yes. So I think that that's very favourable. And it's conceivable that the Wildcats could be 6-2, 7-1 or better out of that. The thing that I think is going to happen, and this... I could be way off with this, but my thoughts are that Michael Fraser is here to cover until Todd Blanchfield is back. And then I think he gets the ask and the Wildcats go after a power forward or a centre as their third import.
You read my mind because this was going to be a question I was going to ask, is which team panic sacks an import first? And I think it might be the Wildcats with Fraser because I think they need a big guy.
This is one of Andrew's kind of favorite topics. Do you have any answer, Andrew? And it's very early days. I hate to forecast firing, but do it, man.
Well, he can hardly get on the court at the moment, so you're not getting good value for money out of him at the moment. But there's also the little thing of, does Bryce Cotton get citizenship? And then they bring in another import.
Good point.
That story's just disappeared, hasn't it? Completely gone off the radar, that one.
It has. It has. But surely the paperwork is still in whatever department it needs to be in. I don't know whether that is still an ongoing thing. I assume he still wants to become an Australian, although...
Well, he's married to a girl from Perth. They've got kids here. So I think his roots are fairly planted.
Although he's buggered from the Olympics perspective now. Because that spot now belongs to Matisse.
I mean, who is doing the legal at the Wildcats? I'd be sweat every day I come to the office. I'd be keep my head down because that is... You would have thought that's your bread and butter. So that's been poorly done because that's been, 2 years in the making. The process literally takes 9 months to, a year and a half. So huge. I don't know what the hang up is there, but huge mistake.
The paperwork in Sydney, do you think?
Well,
and could this be a Sydney Kings fan that's still pissed off about 2019?
That's right.
Well, 2020, I should say.
I've got a question for everyone. I've written it down here and everything. Will the Jack Jumpers be better than Southeast Melbourne in their inaugural or first season? Southeast Melbourne finished 9-19. From what we've seen of the Blitz, their imports coupled together with a few logos, are they going to be better than Southeast?
And can I piggyback off that? Because I've got a similar question. Yep. What will look like success for Tasmania? Does it need to be winning? Does it matter where they finish on the ladder for it to be a successful season?
As far as their measure of success, looking at the Blitz and how well they packed out those sort of lesser arenas with that preseason product, their success is going to be if they build a good little fan base. And it looks as though Tasmania is rabid and keen to go. I'll talk about on-court in a second. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I think, first of all, on-court, I don't think they'll do as well as Southeast Melbourne. I thought Phoenix did really well in that first season of theirs. And I don't, in terms of win losses. But I think Tassie will do all right. I think what they'll need to find is a real, hopefully one of their imports becomes a guy they can really build around for a few seasons. If they don't have, one and done imports and they build a foundation with a high quality player import that can build a connection to the local community, I think that's really important. And look, the players they've got look pretty good in terms of import wise, whether they're there for the long haul or it's just another stamp in the passport, that's yet to be seen.
I really like what they've done. I love the interview with Scott Roth that Liam Santa Maria did. Those coach interviews were really enlightening. I thought they're worth listening to for the mega fans out there. I think they've got a lot of really good personalities. So Jack McVay is going to be great. The kids will love watching Will Magnay throw it down. Looks like Josh Adams will be throwing it down a bit. I've got Sam McDaniel, the son of former star Wayne McDaniel. I saw on Twitter, Joseph, you mentioned that he was a really good guest with Boddy and Brad. So I think off the court, I think they'll have some really good players to engage in the community and their coach as well. He's got a great sense of humour. I actually have them above Cairns. I think they'll finish second last and I think it will be deemed a success overall.
Yeah, I think kind of the same. I mean, in terms of if you look at what Tasmania has, I mean, they've got the cricket teams and that's really it. They've kind of got these two surrogate football teams in Hawthorn and North Melbourne who play a lot of their home games there, but they don't really have a team that they can kind of call their own outside of the cricket. So I think this makes a lot of sense. I hate to say it, I'm even kind of finding that the name Jack Jumpers is growing on me, which I never thought I would
love
say.
It. We loved it from the get-go, didn't we?
I think it's good.
I had seen David Attenborough Jack Jumper. And I was like, no, I'm aboard. I'm on it. I'm all for it. If you get stung by too many, like an average adult can die from the Jack Jumper.
So yes. We kind of had a bit of fun with that in terms of
the loves team names.
The sport. Oh, I love them. I love them. We looked at some of the most ridiculous names of all time, but we just looked at it and said, why would they not go back to the Devils? But yeah. I guess they're kind of wanting that fresh start, so it kind of makes a bit of sense. I love the imports. I mean, Josh Adams looks like he is going to be one of the most fun guys. This is kind of almost like your league pass team.
Yeah.
We're like, if they're on, you'll watch them.
Will Magne looks re-energized. He'll be, you know, he'll be getting lobs. He'll probably have four dunks a game. The kids will love that. So, yeah, no, I would definitely be rooting for them as a second team. Yeah.
Do you know the biggest question I've got about them, and I'll open this up to everyone. What do you guys make of Clint Steindl being the captain ahead of Jack McVay?
Okay. I was just about to say, this is a great question. Steindl's been hurt the last couple of years. I really like him as a shooter, but now he's already hurt. He's dislocated his finger or something. So he'll probably miss a bit of time. And I just, people who miss time in the NBA, in the NBL, when it's only a 28-game season, health is so important because there's so few games. Every game matters. You can't be like, oh, I've hurt my finger, I'm going to miss three games. I'm not saying he's doing that on purpose at all, but I value playing every game so much. And so as far as him being captain as well, he's never struck me as a particularly vocal person. When at the Wildcats, he was always kind of a little bit aloof, if that's not a critical term. So I was very surprised to see it. What do you think, Adrian?
Yeah, much the same. He's always seemed so under the radar, kind of quiet kind of guy, wouldn't really make a big fuss about things. So to him to take a leadership role from that, I mean, there's different ways of being leaders, right? You don't have to be the yelling and shouting guy to be an effective leader. You know, maybe he's more the putting arm around a shoulder and a quiet word, you know, one-on-one. That kind of leader can be really effective. So I'm surprised by it. But having said that, it was a player's vote. So, you know, they know what's going on more than we do. So I guess I've just got to back them in and say, well, that's the right call.
Oh, see, that ruins my theory. I assume because Scott Roth coached him in Perth, Scott gave him the gig, but the players voted, did they? Oh, that's interesting.
I believe so. I think that's what I read, that it was a player's vote. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Think you're right. I think he's going to be a good counterbalance to Scott Roth, who looks pretty fiery by all. I get the impression he's a guy who really flame people, especially the way that he hasn't played that Russian next star, Mikhailovsky.
Nikita Mikhailovsky.
He's been happy to sit him in preseason games.
Yeah, and I saw the NBL news guys had him projected in the starting five. So that is a surprise.
So he's not afraid to kind of be like, yes, no, you know, my way, highway. So Steindl's probably a pretty good softer counterbalance to that, so maybe he'll work out. But I want to make the case for the Jack Jumpers. So 9 and 19, I think they'll win more than 9, for the simple reason of, I want to open the floor on a jet in a second. I hope I'm pronouncing his surname correct. But I think they've got a really good big import in Magne, who's right up there with Humphreys and Johnson, in my opinion. And then Adams will score a little bit. And then I am worried about that middle depth, like McDaniel, Steindl already hurt, you know, McVay, like who's going to be a set starter and play every game really well. They're kind of trick or treat guys, so good 1 minute, not so good the next, or game to game. So, but I still think they'll be better, because you look at South East Melbourne that year, there were less teams. The competition was, I think, a little bit better that year. And then also they had Ty Wesley go down game 5 minutes into game one, and then they broke down towards the end. I think this team will at least, at the very least, maintain its health going through. And for that reason, I think they'll win more than 9. But I wanted to open up the floor on their other import. Is it? I thought it was going to be Maggette, was his surname. Maggette, is that right?
Maggette, apparently.
Yeah.
Is he, do you like him? Do you think he's too little in the NBL? Like, he doesn't, I don't know. What do you think?
I think he can get away with smaller guards. I mean, if you look at guys like Bryce Cotton, Casper Ware's been incredibly good. Going back to Randall as well with Sydney and Adelaide, there's been a lot of very successful guys. Scott Machado's another one. So you can easily get by in the NBL with undersized guards. It's just going to be how well he runs the team. And from all accounts, he is very much a get it off the boards, get it to me as quick as you can.
Speedy.
Tassie are going to play with a really fun pace. And that's kind of why I have them as my team that I'm going to be watching when the Wildcats are not on. They're very much going to be that league pass team, because they will be fun. As we've already said, we know that Josh Adams is super bouncy. He throws down some crazy dunks. So they're going to be fun.
It is a small backcourt, though, with the two of them.
But it is.
But yeah.
I'm worried about his decision-making ability. There's been a few games that I've watched.
Yeah, sorry.
And he's, you know, he's sort of just dribbled the ball out, just held onto possession, taken some bad shots when there would have been a better one on offer. It's the one area of growth that I would be looking for from him. But otherwise, I think, you know, first import out, he's better than plenty we've seen before, right? So.
And it's preseason, but that's why I like New Zealand as a riser, going back to what we talked before, because I think Peyton Siver is going to be the most poised point guard in the NBL as far as executing plays to get wins. And he's got enough talent around him that he can do it. But that's a different story.
He threw some great passes in the blitz. The thing I liked about Siver is his maturity and his basketball IQ. He didn't feel like he needed to take the game. He didn't need to do too much. I felt like he played within the game really well. I love New Zealand's length and athleticism. Like Besson, Dieng, even Galloway has really good length. Like I think New Zealand will be a tough out this season. I do.
I think they're in the four.
Just before we move on to probably Southeast Melbourne, we have to address this. New Zealand, do they have the greatest name in the history of the NBL in Principal Singh?
Sent to the principal's office.
That's your line right there. Nathan, you nailed it. If that doesn't come up in commentary, I'll take you to another steak dinner.
Principal's office. Well, this year.
The other one I like is Ariel. It's hard not to think of the Little Mermaid when you. He's not New Zealand, but
do it in Sebastian the Crab.
If they haven't got an in-stadium sting where if he makes a score, it doesn't good, and they just play that little bit where it goes part Ariel. Of that world faded out. That's. Or if he gets like back-to-back threes, like thingamabobs, I got 20. You know, you can do it. There's a lot to be done, and New Zealand have fun. This is such a departure from what we're talking about. New Zealand have such fun with what they do. They are by far the most fun team in the NBL as far as their socials and the comments they make. They're the most fun team on that. They're the most fun team in their operation. Even on court, they have a fun product. Even when they lose, they're kind of fun. Ty Webster was ridiculous last season.
Modi Mayor.
I just love that team. Modi Mayor. I love that team.
And then they've got Rasmus Bark too. So you can play the...
just some classical guy.
There's so much on offer. I should just mention Ariel is actually Melbourne, but I just brought him up as another name. Speaking of Melbourne, Stuart mentioned South East Melbourne. There's a lot of buzz for them by pretty much Brad Rosen seemed to be the only one that didn't pick him in the playoffs. Everyone, including Liam Santamaria, seems to have them basically as championship favourite. I like their team, but championship favourite? I don't know. What do you think, guys?
It's a little bit strong, I'd say. I think they're a solid playoff team. But there's just so much unknown. Like, how is this team actually going to come together? They've got another backcourt. You've got Cam Glidden, who was ordinary last season. You've got Brokoff, who is, by all accounts, has returned back to Brokoff form, but coming off a terrible season. Dane Pinot, again, another guy who injured all last season. Don't know what he's going to bring to the table. A lot of question marks over this team. So I like them. I like them on paper, but I want to see what they can deliver game in, game out. And look, to be fair, Simon Mitchell is probably my favorite coach in the NBL. Something immensely likable about that guy. I like just the Phoenix organization and what they're trying to do. So I'm a little bit biased because if I had to pick if the Wildcats were my first team, Phoenix would be my second team. I just like them. Just a lot of question marks about how they're going to perform.
And I like the way you said that at the end there, Andrew. We're like, I like them. And I think that's what we're talking about here. When you talked about Nathan, when you were saying how a lot of people are really high on them, I think it's because Southeast Melbourne are the most likable team. Simon Mitchell is the most likable coach. He's always been very kind to Andrew and I. He does interviews. We've seen him in press conferences. He remembers names. Super likable guy. Is he the best coach in the NBL? Maybe, maybe not. And then also you look at where's the league based? The league is based in Melbourne. United are quite cagey by my impression of that team and how they operate. They're not super generous with their players and their time. It's just my impression. Whereas South East Melbourne are a new club. They're looking to make fast friends.
Yeah.
And also, you know, they give interviews like Tommy Greer gives interviews and so on. So I think there's an element of because they're good content, they get lots of stuff written about them. You know, it's like Picasso. There's a lot of Picasso paintings out there because he lived to 90 and he was famous in his lifetime, whereas Van Gogh was a nutcase, poor, and died at 30. So there's not as many paintings. So I think there's an element of that going on. As far as on court, I just look at this. How much did they rely on Kiefer Sykes last year? He had to get into the paint. When they were in big clutch games, he always played well. And he got in the paint, he found people. I'm talking more towards the end of the year when he came back from injury. Who's going to be that guy who's going to get into the paint and make a decision for someone else? It's not really Mitch Creek. Maybe a little, but he looks to score a bit more. It's not going to be Brokoff, who's a catch-and-shoot player. It's certainly not Cam Glidden and Tarangi. It's just not in them, unfortunately. So is their new import going to be as good as Kiefer Sykes? Like, he was terrific. And then their big situation. Joe Chi, I look and see Glacial, pick and roll play. I could score on Joe Chi in a pick and roll. I'd come off, he'd have to play the drops, and I'd shoot it over him. So I don't know where that came from. What do you two think?
I think the addition of Xavier Munford could be very interesting. He could be better than Kiefer Sykes. I've seen footage of him dropping 46 against the Knicks G League team. Like, he's definitely a scorer. So I don't know. Maybe he is that guy that is going to be able to get into the paint, kick out for other guys. He could very well be the guy that comes in and takes too many shots and the rest of his team hates him. So it's a bit of a question mark there. I agree with you on Joe Shea. I think he's probably the most intriguing guy in the league, just because of, obviously, he's got that Chinese connection there. So kind of opens up the game a little bit to China, which could potentially be a really, really big thing. I mean, if you look at what, obviously, before a lot of the proverbial hit the fan in the NBA, you had teams like the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets who did a lot with China, made a lot of money there. So maybe that's an opportunity for the league to expand. But
Brian Gorgian's huge on him, like huge, well, massive fan.
That was something I was just about to bring up. Was like, was he the one who said he was going to revolutionize the game? No, that was Reeve. But yeah, he was huge on him. But you know, Gorgian's, what's Gorgian going to say? Oh, he's crap. He's going to be terrible. You know what I mean? And Gorgian's so willing with an interview. I mean, the most dangerous place to be is between Brian Gorgian and a microphone or a camera. And I say that in a nice way. But yeah, and that's the thing. I think you hear that from Brian Gorgian, you're like, oh, this guy's going to be amazing. But I look at Joe Chi, and bless him, I'm sure he's a fine player, but do we all enjoy the Colton Iverson experience last year? Do we enjoy Magne in Perth, where they like to play a bit smaller? You know, like 7-footers and a bit lumbering. Like, it's just not the direction the NBL game is going. I didn't know what Gorge was saying, and I know that seems ridiculous to fly in the face of Gorge. Who am I? I saw what I saw.
I think this Dante Exum rumor that's going around could potentially decide the entire season, really.
And they've got another import spot open too. So, that yeah, there are some wild cards there.
Keen point. Dante Exum, when he decided not to come to the NBL, that was kind of glossed over a little bit. I thought that was a real hit to the ego of the NBL, whereby it's plastering itself as this jump from the NBL to the NBA. We're an NBA pathway, da-da-da. And then you have an Australian player, played for the Boomers at 27, has struggled in the NBA. If ever the time, imagine the NBL must have been licking its lips thinking, we're going to have Belvedova and Exum in our league. And gold, or we're going to have a Boomer, a guard in his prime who's got NBA all over him. And then the fact that he seemingly hasn't chosen to do that. That is a huge, they probably won't address it this way, but I feel like that's a huge hit. Because you get Dellavedova at 31, who's got a terrible injury history. Imagine if he had Exum at 27, prime, do it. I felt really bad. I just felt bad for South East Melbourne. Felt bad for the league in general. I hope I'm not being too negative, but that was just my impression.
One of the things I really like about you, Joseph, is that you do tell it how it is. So I think there's enough people in NBL media that sugarcoat things a bit. So I think that's fair. I think he played really well in the Olympics too. So it would have been a major coup for the league. But yeah,
Anyway, I've said enough.
Just one last thing with South East Melbourne, though. I just wanted to kind of, I guess, get you guys' thoughts on this. Could they be the most hungry team in the league? When you think about the fact that they were up 17 on United in game 3.
Well, they choked.
They absolutely choked. They will feel like they should be the defending champions right now. You've got Mitch Creek's coming back after a pretty tumultuous season in the off-court stuff. As you mentioned, Brokoff and Glidden had subpar seasons. A lot of people are talking about them. Surely they have to be hungrier than anyone this season.
Totally concur.
Yeah, they're hungry, but I think everybody's hungry to an extent. So I don't know how much hunger will get wins on the board. So at the end of the day, you still got to put the ball in the basket.
Unless it's Lamar Patterson, I guess. There it is. There it is.
On your bike, Lamar. On your bike. We're all huge fans.
Absolutely.
Oh, the talent is unquestionable.
We saw what we saw. Sorry, I interrupted that. Go on.
No. For me, a couple of things. So the good side of the ledger for South East Melbourne, they're one of the least disrupted teams as far as roster turnover. So they do have a lot of returning guys. So that is a good thing. They've kept their coach. There's been a lot of coach turnover too. And it was only their second season. They're probably trending up. So they're the goods. For me, the bad, kind of going on the back of what Andrew said, Cam Glidden was a bit disappointing. Ryan Brokoff was definitely disappointing. Okay, maybe that was injury affected from all reports, and he has looked better in the preseason. So hopefully he's back to form. Ruben Tarangi is a year older. Yes, he's very capable, but he went disappearing for large stretches in the playoffs last season as well. So what are you going to get out of him? And then the other thing is Kyle Adnam. So he was named as captain, I'm a big fan. But has he hit his ceiling? He's 28 now. Like, do we know what we're getting out of him now? I don't know. Is there going to be any more improvement from Adnam? He's probably maxed out where he's going to be as far as career-wise is concerned. So, yeah, I do think they'll make the playoffs, but I find the buzz about them maybe a little bit too much. And maybe people are seeing and hearing things that I'm not. But
You nailed it with Adam for me, whereas I think he's quite a good player. But when he's on the court, now he's been named captain, they seem to just give him the ball a bit and be like, oh, it's the Adam show. Just stand back and watch. I'm like, this is not percentage basketball. This is not high percentage basketball in what I've seen. So, yeah, I always look at where a team's trending, who's a favorite on the team and who's not. I mean, and I just think there's a little bit of favoritism going on with Adam because he's from Southeast Melbourne, or for whatever reason, where I'm like, I'm just not seeing where the amount of minutes allotted to him are giving you production. I just haven't been able to make that quantum leap, I'm afraid. What were you going to say, Andrew?
No, I wasn't going to say anything at all other than just complete agreement. I think you guys have nailed it. I have nothing further to add.
No further questions, Your Honour.
That's it. All right, so is Illawarra the favourite then?
They have four starting centres. Four starting centres, basically. In the Frolings, Reith and Ogilvy. I'm a big fan of Reith. I thought he looked really good in the Olympics. They're big. They're going to really beat up on teams like Adelaide, Perth, Brisbane that have problems at the big stocks. I think they're favourites. Yeah, definitely. Gorgian as well. You've got to make him favourites.
I mean, Gorge will have him ready to go. You know, he'll be running there. We're the underdogs. We've been forgotten about again. Everybody's talking other teams. Look at us, you know. David against Goliath. He's a master at that sort of player psychology side of things. He'll have him fired up. If Harry Froehling is ever going to become a good player, this is when it's going to happen, because you either get fit and get good with Gorgian or you sit on the bench. So I think they're in with a really, really strong chance.
And I'll say this, as far as when you go, they've got four starting centers and they do, but Gorgian has shown that he's not afraid to say, you're not working. This is not working out for me. It's not happening. He was very short with Adele, but also let's not forget Emmett Nahr. Emmett Nahr was a player who just wasn't quite getting the production done. And now I don't believe he's there anymore. Gorgian said, yep, love you, but got to leave you. We're trying to win games. I think Gorgian is the one coach left who is not entering what I call the pace race. All the other teams want to push the pace. Perth have now converted. They've got a G League coach pushing the pace. Score, NBA type product. Whereas Gorgian's the one guy's like, if I have to drag the game, if I have to, like a zombie in a movie, grab the game by the ankle and drag it down so far into the dirt and keep scores in the 70s and have a horrible TV product to get the win, I do not care. And he's the one guy who's got the license to do it still, because it's Brian Gorgian. You can't fly. You can't go against Brian Gorgian. So for that reason, and the fact they've still got Harvey, and then they've added Reith, who looks really good in the Olympics and looked like his game would translate. I think, Nathan, you're absolutely right when you say they're a favorite.
Continuity of Harvey is huge. Continuity is really, when there's a league with so much turnover, so much import turnover, I think the Harvey thing is really big.
Harvey and Jessup.
Jessup too, yeah.
Good call.
And
Jessup should take the next step.
He should improve.
Well, the thing with Illawarra, and it's a great point you bring up about the fact that they like to play in the 70s last season. I mean, that was one of the things I said going into the playoffs. And funnily enough, it aligned with Perth because of all the injuries. But Illawarra, last in the league in points per game, last in the league in field goal, 3-point and free throw percentage. So then they weren't a good shooting team last season. But I think having guys like, you know, Xavier Rathen-Mays looks like he's a walking bucket potentially. I saw this video clip today of him dropping 30 in 4 minutes playing for Florida State. So he's
30 in 4 minutes?
Yep.
Oh, right. That's like Earl Watson. Wow, jeez.
Stu, yes. Can I just say, your commitment to finding small clips in the deepest, darkest depths of the internet is really impressing me. It's getting me hot.
He's our details guy.
I'd actually seen it before, though. I'd seen it when it happened, and then I was looking at highlights again. I'd forgotten that it was him that had done it. So so you've got these guys that can potentially go. And Antonius Cleveland, I mean, he's got G League and NBA experience, and he's listed as coming off the bench.
Yeah, unbelievable. No, I'm doubling down on what we've all just said. I think, Stu, you made a fine point.
It's just, this is one of those teams where, you wouldn't be surprised if they ran away with it.
Negatives? Has anyone got any trepidations or anything?
Finding time for all the bigs, maybe. I think Harry Froehling's probably the odd man out. I've always been a much bigger fan of Sam. I always thought the NBA buzz on Harry was a bit much. I guess Ogilvy
crushed him. Seemingly crushed him. He went over there and thought, oh, my word.
Yeah.
Just tidal wave of talent.
And it's just, I don't know. He's had maybe some weight issues and some conditioning issues as well, which probably doesn't help. But, yeah, I think maybe that's it's hard to poke holes in this team, though, I got to say.
Do you know, the only small one I can maybe come up with is one ball between Harvey and Rathen-Mays. Maybe that's a slight issue, but
I mean, Jessup will want to eat two, obviously wanting to get over to the Warriors.
It's a good issue having too much talent.
Yeah, and I think the thing in all this is Gorgian, who's happy to say, yeah, Ogilvy, Froling, Harry, you're not getting any minutes. Sorry about that. What are you going to do? I'm Olympic coach. What are you going to do? Where are you going to go?
Yeah, the last. Yeah.
It's so you're at the feet of the throne. It's over. So yep. I think they're going to be very good.
So obviously we haven't talked about Sydney and Cairns a hell of a lot. That will come on future shows, both on NBL Pocket Podcast and the Sport Blokes. And we'd love to have another chat with you boys again, which I'm sure will happen. One thing we like to ask people when they talk to us on our show is the best live performance they've ever seen. So it doesn't necessarily have to be basketball. If you've got a basketball and anything else, that's great. But what's the best performances you boys have seen in person that you've been lucky enough to experience?
All right. So I did a little think about this. I am going to lean on basketball. I'll probably say one non-basketball event was a Army versus Navy American football game. I was fortunate enough to go see. Nice. That was at the Washington Stadium a few years ago. And it was just amazing because it's just, let's go Army, let's go Navy. Yeah. 80,000 people or whatever packed into the stadium. It was a pretty incredible thing to see, but that was fun, but it wasn't thrilling. So what I want to lean on is the thrilling moments where you've had the hair stand up on the back of your neck and you just kind of like an out of body experience as part of a live performance. And I drilled it down to two moments. So two different games. So the runner up was the game at Challenge Stadium where Perth were playing New Zealand Breakers in I think it was a semi-final game. But it was the one where CJ Bruton had the shot on the buzzer, sort of the mid-range shot to win it. And Sean Redditch flew out and blocked it out of court and went
berserk. We were at that one too. Yeah.
And just the atmosphere, Challenge Stadium, for all its faults and its stinky toilets and all those sorts of things, it was so good for atmosphere. And I still miss it. Like the arena is lovely, but it sucks compared to Challenge Stadium as a person watching a game.
Were you at that playoff game, Andrew, where Rashad Tucker had moved on to the Melbourne Tigers and he was at the free throw line and I think he had two shots to either win or force overtime? That's the loudest I've ever heard Challenge Stadium. That place was absolutely going nuts. The place was shaking, yep. I reckon. That was amazing.
Yeah. I used to sit behind, I was behind the basket at that era and it was just, that was an amazing place to be because you're kind of looking in the eyes of these players as they stand at the free throw line. That venue was brilliant. But having said that, my biggest highlight was actually at the venue that I've just paid out on, Perth Arena. And it was the night that Jermaine Beal just decided to go bonkers and hit anything he shot. I'm sure you guys probably remember this one.
We were at that game.
We were courtside for that one.
Like three courtside. Rows back from the front. Yeah. So there's a video on YouTube of the condensed package of him hitting all those threes. And with pretty much every one of them in the second half, you can actually see me standing up with the three fingers up before the ball's even left his hand.
I was going to say, that's exactly what it was. Everybody in that stadium knew it was going in before he even shot it. It was just this crazy atmosphere and just the electricity in that building that night. I don't think it's ever been beaten. I think that was just one of those once in a lifetime kind of feelings. Everybody felt it.
I would have
hated to be on the opposition team.
Oh yeah.
There was one in particular where he's picked Chris Golding from behind and the pass has gone ahead to Beal and he's taken one dribble over half court and I'm already stood up with the three fingers up because you know it's coming. And it was impossible to stop that night.
We had a photo with him afterwards in the Wildcats Champions Club or whatever it's called after the game. And obviously everyone wanted a piece of him after that game. He took so many photos, but he looked so exhausted. He was absolutely knackered after that one. Oh, good times.
So yeah, that has to go down as probably my best live performance, just in terms of the feeling and the venue and the excitement. That was a fun one. So thanks for suggesting that as a topic, because that gave me a lot of opportunities to reflect and remember the good days.
What about you, Joseph?
Well, I was actually in Utah in 98 to see Jordan's last shot.
Oh, are you serious? That's why you had to go second,
isn't it? I'm not messing around. I wasn't.
No. This is the feeding the bird story again, Andrew. The feeding the bird.
I was so sitting there waiting. I was like, do this, be a thespian, do it. No, of course I wasn't there. As far as like live shows, Cirque du Soleil, huge fan. Put that to one side. As far as I'll stick to NBL. I got two. One that's pretty good, that's pretty famous, is when Townsville Crocodiles, they were then, beat the Wildcats in the first round when Connor Henry was coach, forgetting the year at Challenge. The one where Homicide took his shirt off, went crazy. The crowd was going mental. Really hit, I think, a record, like 9 threes for the game.
10, yeah, it was huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was, and as you talk about, everyone's high off chlorine from Challenge Stadium coming over. It had this miasma in the air. The other one that I want to do, a subtle one. Do you remember a Wildcat import by the name of Darren Brooks? Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Money from mid-range.
He was my favorite player because I've never seen a more winning player in my life. And he just always found a way to get a big steal or a big play. I was a huge fan of him. And his story is interesting. Been trying to get him on the pod for a while, where finished college, was a good player, didn't quite work out NBA, came to NBL, then did a couple of years in Korea, and then disappeared. Only played, 3 or 4 years professionally, left at mid-20s. But I thought he was such a win. Anyway, the game I'm talking about is when the Wildcats played West Sydney Razorbacks, who at that time had James Harvey. And James Harvey, obviously former Wildcat, had hit these big plays. I don't even know what year this was. It was only a regular season game.
I remember this game well, actually.
West Sydney went up quite big. I'm going to say even as much as 20, quite late, maybe going into the fourth. It looked over. Whole crowd stood up for the entire fourth quarter. And the Wildcats, Darren Brooks, the architect of it, just brought them back and back. And I remember they came back from a huge deficit. It got close and James Harvey hit a massive three late in the fourth, like almost to end.
Oh, yes.
They're bear hugging him. He's given the shush. He's the index finger to the lips, quieting the Wildcat crowd, which it did. No one had any reply. One guy had a reply, Darren Brooks. Came back down. I really kind of remember the play. I just remember the moment and the feel he made about it, and they won it. Or maybe they didn't even, maybe Wildcats didn't even win it.
I think it was a baseline jump shot from Darren Brooks, if I recall.
And I remember being close to the action. I had a baseline ticket. And I remember being close to whatever action happened. I was close to it. And I think it was Darren Brooks. But I remember to go from, they must have won. Because Harvey gave the silence, quiet. Yep. No one thought it was possible. And then Darren Brooks, I think, could have hit a mid-ranger and got fouled. Could have done something outrageous. But I remember him winning that game. And that team was like Ronaldson, a few others. Wasn't the best team ever, but he just wheeled them with defense.
Mid-2000s, I reckon, Joseph. Mid-2000s.
Yeah, that sounds about right, when the Wildcats were kind of in their struggly kind of years. That was a long answer, but that's my answer.
That's almost like the Reggie Miller taking the bow at the center of Chicago Stadium.
Precisely.
And then Tony Kukoc hitting the three to win it at the buzzer. It's like that.
And it was just whisper quiet as he was doing the shoot. You could hear him shushing. You could hear the actual just shh. You could hear it from him. And then to come back and then silence him in reverse. I love stuff like that.
That's the image I can see in my mind's eye is James Harvey. Yeah, yeah, I do remember.
At being lifted, being hoisted and hugged and at a leaning back angle, shushing the root. Oh, yeah. And then Darren Brooks to do it. Sorry, guys, what's your answers?
Well, actually, just quickly before we do get into ours, James Harvey kind of had a little bit of a history of doing that. Because I think there was a time, I'm sure it was him with Gold Coast and when Chris Goulding, I always call him Goulding. Those two came across and they were celebrating at mid-court when they played for the Blaze. And yeah, there's something about when those guys would come back, they would just always like to try and stick the dagger into Perth.
Yeah, we've got the Sailor Boy salute, wasn't it?
It was.
I know we've got some time issues, so I will really do a real cliff notes here. But for those interested, Stewie and I have talked about it on episode 56, 60 and 61, where we've kind of talked about our history with sport. But we've got a lot of similar ones. So we saw Adam Gilchrist go nuts in the 2007 World Cup final in Antigua. Oh, sorry, Barbados.
Barbados, yeah. 149 runs off 104 balls. It was just stupid.
The one and only NBA game I've been to, I was very lucky to jag Kobe dropping 65 on Portland. So, yeah, they're the ones that come to mind for me. Yeah.
And I think, the Jermaine Beal one was right at the top of my list. I saw the Magic Johnson All-Stars play against the Boomers in about 1994 or 95, with Magic Johnson hitting a three to send that to overtime. So, seeing some cool stuff.
So, thanks very much again, lads. It's been an absolute pleasure. We'd love to do it again. I guess for those listening on our stream, NBL Pocket Podcast, do you have plugs, guys, you want to give?
Well, yeah, you can catch us on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod or Andrew at Andrew Kenyon. And yeah, we're on Patreon if you really like the show. But more importantly, the sport blokes. This has been one of the best we've ever done on this thing, Andrew. I had a great time.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Really enjoyed it.
Really. Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, cheers. Yeah, so at Sportblokes, SportBlokes on Twitter. Search for us on any streaming platforms. And yeah, we've got Cody Ellis coming up on our next episode. So we've got a bit of an NBL extravaganza coming up as we head into the season. So we're looking forward to that. A lot of cricket and basketball this summer. So that's what to look forward to for those that like more than just the basketball.
lots of fun.